Have you ever tried to feed a pill to a dog?
Yes, unfortunately, I have.
Well, there you go, right? It's very akin to like wrestling an alligator, right? And if you want to get anywhere with it effectively, like the best way to do it is to wrap the pill in like peanut butter or something like that they actually like. You know, that will make it down go down smoother. And so these days, like that's what Gen AI has become, really, in my opinion.
Welcome to the Data Tea, our monthly podcast on the news, trends, and technology transforming data today. We're your hosts, Armand Petrosian and Satish Jayanthi, the co-founders of Coalesce. Let's get started.
We've got an exciting topic here. It's a phrase that I think we've all become way too familiar with, which is lipstick on the pig, and how AI made data governance sexy, which is funny because I feel like data governance has never really been a sexy topic, but it is becoming something that's way more relevant recently, just out of the nature of how important the quality is of the data for it when it comes to AI. And we've got an absolute expert here as our star of the show, Pierre, the CEO of Infrastrux. So I'm Armand Petrosian, CEO and co-founder of Coalesce. We got Satish, my co-founder and CTO of Coalesce. But Pierre, it's such a pleasure to have you on. I would love it if you could just give everybody that is listening in a quick background on yourself and why you're excited about the topic today.
Yeah, for sure. So first of all, thank you for having me. Really happy to be here having that chat. I think it's going to be a fun one. My name is Pierre. As you've mentioned, I am the CEO of Infrastrux. As you might be able to gather from my name, accent, and everything else about me, originally French-Canadian. Infrastrux is a consulting firm, data and AI consulting firm. We end up working with a whole bunch of different customers, especially helping them go through that like data modernization journey that has become very central to, I think, a lot of organizations today. And here to talk about, like, of all things, data governance, because as you've very rightly put it, not exactly the one topic that gets people fighting to subscribe to, you know, attend a live podcast of something like this, right?
Yeah, definitely. I agree. I think it's something that's only become recently highly relevant, but I'm excited to dive into it. Before we do, a couple quick questions on your background, Pierre. Like, how did you even get into the data space, the data ecosystem? You know, I first came across Infrastrux in the early stages of when we launched out of stealth here at Coalesce as one of the leading SIs in the Snowflake ecosystem. I also saw your background that you didn't start as the CEO of the company either. It looked like you've gone through a very unorthodox or maybe unconventional path into being the CEO of Infrastrux. Could you just share how you got to where you're at, both in the data space as well as in your career?
Sure. It's a bit of a whirlwind, I guess. I started out in the public sector for the Canadian IRS, of all things. Mm-hmm. Quickly decided that wasn't quite for me, moved over to a digital marketing agency, which is probably as close to professional whiplash as you can probably get. And from there, I did retail, e-commerce, neuroscience, gaming, and then I landed in consulting for what was at the time like the largest AWS pure play SI in Canada. We went through a few M&As, became one of the largest players in the AWS ecosystem globally. Sold that to Rackspace in 2019. Took a few months off. Kind of thought about like what would come next in terms of where the landscape would be going, basically, right? Like we had helped like literally hundreds of organizations go through like digital transformation programs, and we had seen like the good, the bad, the ugly kind of thing. And the one thing that like the one sticking point that was consistently very visible to us as one of the places there was a lot of room for improvement, I think, was on the data side. And so we started looking at the ecosystem, trying to figure out like, hey, we have this one playbook that's very like, you know, pure play SI focused. How about we find like the next, you know, emerging leader kind of platform and build our business around that? So that's how we kind of landed on Snowflake. After having looked at everything in the market, we independently, myself and my co-founders, independently landed on Snowflake each on our own. And then when we got together and kind of started talking about what we wanted to launch next, the decision was pretty easy to make. So we found some good success in the ecosystem, especially like what I call the next gen data ecosystem. So, you know, Snowflake is one piece of it, but then you're looking at like all of the new generation BI tools and all of the new just ways to think about data and all that. So, and you know, our partnership with yourselves at Coalesce, right, is a good example of that. And as we were helping our organizations kind of go through that adoption of those new, like this new wave of tooling, we also found ourselves in a place where we needed to mature quite a bit, right, and transform the way the business was operating, because we realized very quickly that, you know, if you're going to help an organization do anything on the data side, if you limit yourself to just like, you know, specific implementation, specific technical projects, it's going to be very difficult for you to drive real value for them. And so we started expanding like in the, going down the full gamut of like a full-blown data AI consultancy, like all the way from data science, data governance, which a big spoiler alert, I guess, will be fairly relevant to our conversation pretty quickly.
That's awesome. And it looks like you got a pretty deep involvement in the entrepreneurial ecosystem as well. What sparked that, or what sparks that for you? Obviously, you've had your own career and have become the CEO of Infrastructs, but it sounds like it is important to you that you invest into the startup world. And I'd be curious to hear either what motivates you or what drives you to be involved in that way. And have you always done that?
Yeah, I actually started mentoring in the entrepreneurial space like before I became an entrepreneur myself. So, you know, if you want to talk about imposter syndrome, like big time. Man, I would love to tell you that like I like involving myself with startups and whatnot because I love like the energy, the hustle and all of that. And it's true, right? That's a big part of it. But crucially for me, like, I know it's going to sound maybe a little trite, but I think it's because mostly I'm a romantic guy, right? And I love falling in love with problems. And that's basic. Don't tell my girlfriend that, by the way. But you know, this is very much, you know, what entrepreneurship, especially in the early stages, as you're trying to find your product market fit, as you're going through that first iteration of really defining the problem you're solving for, going deep into it, meeting people like day in, day out that have that problem that you're trying to solution for. Like this to me, the cycle is so energizing, so interesting. And getting to help, it's kind of funny, right? Because getting to help entrepreneurs go through that cycle is kind of very similar to what I do for my day job, right? And helping organizations kind of solve those problems. And yeah, I guess I'm a bit of a one-trick pony. I fall in love with problems. That's my big defining factor.
It's a good thing to fall in love with. I think it takes a lot of, maybe you got to be a little crazy in love with the problem to have enough conviction to actually go and solve it. So certainly as co-founders, I think both Satish and I can say we felt that way as we went to launch the company and continue to feel that way as we pursue the mission that we're on. So switching gears, just in the spirit of the topic of this conversation, officially it's around data governance. Now AI is finally making data governance sexy, hopefully for a consistent period of time. Hopefully this isn't a fad. You know, assuming that we all know data governance used to be somewhat of a dirty word in the executive suite. What changed and why from your perspective, Pierre?
Oh man, that's a good one. So a few ways to answer that question, right? So first things first, I will say, as far as the attitudes around DG from executive suites, I don't know that anything has changed, really. DG remains this you know, ugly creature that executive suites have to contend with at some point. For the most part, they're forced into it because at some point there's like a regulatory requirement that comes in. They're like, hey, you don't have your act together. Like, you know, you have to do better. Mm-hmm. But I will say, like, what has changed for the better, like the biggest differentiator here is that, and bear with me here, I think that C-suites, executives and organizations like peanut butter quite a bit. And bear with me here. Have you ever tried to feed a pill to a dog?
Yes, unfortunately I have.
Well, there you go, right? It's very akin to like wrestling an alligator, right? And if you want to get anywhere with it effectively, like the best way to do it is to wrap the pill in like peanut butter or something like that, that they actually like, you know, that will make it down, go down smoother. And so these days, like, that's what Gen AI has become, really, in my opinion. Like, the beauty of Gen AI, really, when you think about it, is Gen AI is this fairly shiny object that seems technical in nature. And so it's very intuitive for organizations to go, hey, you know what, we will invest in Gen AI. We will build like our internal chatbot or agentic framework or whatever, right? But then what ends up happening very quickly is as they start rolling out, let's say, their first chatbot, and you know, they want to be able to chat with their data, let's say, they end up with like an accuracy rate of like 60%, less than that even, right? Because it's one thing to stand something like this up, right? Like, I think nowadays, like, especially with platforms like, let's say, Snowflake, right? It's like click, 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 you're up, you can do text to SQL, fantastic. And as long as you expose that to your data end user, your data specialists, they're going to be asking questions that are structured in a way that relate well to the underlying like data schema that you're dealing with. But then on the flip side, as soon as you expose that to the business where it's actually going to drive an impact, they start asking stuff like, hey, how many active customers do we have right now? Right. And unless you have like an actual column in your table that says active customer, yes, no, you end up with ambiguity. What's the definition of an active customer? And you get to that place where the LLM has to make a guess, right? Oh, well, I think an active customer is, I guess, recent transaction, something like that. Like, it will come up with some sort of a definition.
Right.
But the problem is, as soon as you have like, you know, more than one person asking that question, entropy will play against you, and suddenly, like, you know, the LLM will come up with a new definition, and you're gonna have a whole lot of conflicting information. Like, a big part of why AI initiatives fail today is squarely because of that, right? Like, they will pilot it, they will find that there's a very low accuracy rate, and they're gonna go, yeah, that's not for us, we can't trust it. And so, let's say that you want to solve for that, right? Let's say that you're here today, you're listening to that podcast, and you're like, okay, cool. Now I know, right? I need to address that. So what you're going to do is you're going to turn around, you're going to sit down with your stakeholders, you're going to go, all right, let's come up with a definition for active customer. Cool. You will enshrine that in a document somewhere. And, oh, you know what? We have a few other concepts that we need to document that way. And, oh, wouldn't it make sense for a finance person to be responsible for the finance definitions? And then, oh, well, let's go to the technical team. Hey, guys, like, these are our definitions. Can you enshrine that in actual technical level, like data level testing, to make certain that, you know, everything is represented, and build semantic models that are based off of that. And the next thing you know, you're doing DG, you don't even know about it, right? And so DG has become a crucial stepping stone on the critical path to having a functional Gen AI framework within your organization. And that's what is enabling us, I think, as an industry, the most in terms of getting executives to actually sign off on those like very inherently unsexy DG initiatives, because now they have a shiny object. Like, the one thing that's been missing from DG for the longest time is that shiny object that they're able to look at and see, hey, this is a very tangible outcome of the investment we've made in DG.
So basically, you view DG as the pill and Gen AI as the peanut butter for driving the, or reducing the friction for organizations to adopt a data governance strategy. And at times, based on what you're sharing, you think the executives don't even realize it's a data governance strategy. It's more so they're getting answers at a level of quality that's too poor, and they want to improve it. And the only way to do that is through a better data governance strategy. So naturally or organically, an enterprise starts to prioritize that, whereas historically there just hasn't been as big of a driver.
Correct. Exactly. Right. Like, if you look at DG initiatives in the wild, whether it's data cataloging or whether it's you know, building out data governance frameworks or whatever it is, right? The problem you always have is it's very intangible, and oftentimes, historically anyway, like, the legacy way of approaching DG is that you try to boil the ocean, you try to do everything all at once, because, well, it's inherently a very holistic thing. Now you get to first of all come up with like a fairly narrow slice of the part of the business that you're trying to optimize through DG, and you have a very tangible end result, right? An outcome. And yeah, like, it's to your point, I think you know, if you go to an executive and tell them, hey, this is actually, you know, this is actually DG, they will not freak out and go, no, don't do it, right? But being able to tie it back to, hey, yes, this is, these are DG activities, but they're on the way to this thing that is very desirable for the business right now. That's what I think is most impactful.
Yeah, I do agree. I do tend to agree with you. I mean, we've seen, you know, both Satish and I, we recently made an acquisition in the data cataloging space, and it's been something that our customer base has been incredibly enthusiastic about and adopted very quickly. But what you said earlier is relevant, which is oftentimes organizations don't actually take data governance seriously up until there's an issue. So it's usually very reactive. It's not something that organizations have been proactive about, and they'll end up in some regulatory issue or some compliance problem, and then it'll get brought down on them from some external party, and then they start to take data governance really seriously. And it's always been a frustrating thing, I think, for anybody that's in the data space to see that happen over and over again, especially for somebody that gets a lot of exposure into numerous different companies like yourself, Pierre. Yeah. And so on the bright side of things, I'm always an optimist when it comes to things generally. On the bright side of things, at least there isn't something that is necessarily bad that's happening outside of hopefully people just having visibility into Gen AI giving answers or responses that could be of higher quality. And that's a better driving factor than owing the IRS millions of dollars because you had some data reconciliation issue or some data quality. Yeah. So
I feel it's a little bit unfortunate that we have to rely on shiny objects to, you know, kind of convey how important DG is. And I agree that it's always been a challenge. And I know in my experience when we were trying to sell this, it's very hard because you have to connect the dots, you know, and people on the, you know, sometimes they just can't do that or understand why it's important until, as Armand pointed out, some compliance issue happens. And now all of a sudden, who defined this? Where's the definition? Where's the process and all of that? But one question though, now all shiny objects lose their shine at some point as we go. Is there a risk here that we're trying to hide this, or is there any best practices or anything that we can learn from this and say, regardless of these shiny objects, it's critical to have this type of thing in an organization?
Absolutely. So, you know, going through the first cycle of establishing something akin to DG, right, and having it tied to a tangible outcome, like that's great to get you that initial traction. But once you get to that point, yeah, it can't be shiny objects all the way down. There are a few ways to look at this, right? On the one hand, so actually, you guys have probably seen this report that's been making the rounds, right? Like that 95% of AI projects fail. When you start diving into that report, I think it's a very compelling example of how to look at that problem, where they basically say that 95% of the organizations they've asked have said that effectively Gen AI projects haven't impacted their P&L in any meaningful way, right?
Right.
And if you dive a little bit deeper into it, what you realize is that a lot of those organizations, and I'm not saying that the report is wrong, like I think it's pretty much on the dot, but diving a little bit deeper into that, you realize that at an individual level, people in the organization are more individually efficient, right? They get more done on a personal level because they themselves are integrating Gen AI capabilities into their day-to-day workflow. And what's very interesting is if you try to look at the impact of something like Gen AI or something else, right, across the entire organization, and you only look at like your revenue, your top line, bottom line, which admittedly is what matters most, you're missing an entire dimension that is like very tightly coupled to, I guess, your business process optimization, right? So there's a bunch of heuristics that, again, if you do a decent job of data, like data governing, I guess, going through the effort of actually modeling out like business process models for your organization and seeing, you know, where data goes and how it kind of goes through your entire organization, you're going to start to track like data quality measures of how, like what quality looks like at different stages of your business processes. But in doing that, you're also going to start tracking SLAs, right? How long should it take for that data to get from one step of the process to the other? those heuristics, those performance heuristics are the things that you really should be taking a look at on a regular basis to understand what whether the changes that you're bringing to your organization are actually driving an impact across the board. And that impact oftentimes will not necessarily be a straight line to top line, bottom line, but you will be able to at the very least measure it, quantify it, right? And so when it comes to data governance and trying to make data governance something that's much more approachable, like a best practice, you need to identify either problems that are fairly tangible, fairly understandable, that you can point the finger at and say, hey, this was solved through DG, or you have to capture those heuristics and use those as your measure of success. But there has to be something fairly quantifiable rather than qualitative, because qualitative usually won't cut it, and it will be very hard to convince the larger organizations to actually go along with your DG framework, right? And that's a very crucial part, I think, because DG, honestly, building the DG framework is not the hard part. It's actually getting people to adopt it and operate with it. And that part is the one where you need to do a very strong job of, yeah, it's marketing, man. Like it's either shiny objects or KPIs or it's something, but it's something to get people to go, okay, I get it. I will play the game.
Do you think that when it comes to the classification of this statement that 95% of AI projects haven't delivered any value, for example, in businesses, which by the way, for anybody that's interested, I'll share it in the chat here in the messages. But so is what you're saying, you think that it's not necessarily that AI hasn't delivered value. We can be pretty certain that it has delivered value, certainly at the individual level. But for an organization, it's more around how have they positioned the expectations of what they were expecting from AI projects and them not seeing that delivered yet. Is that what you see as the problem currently?
I think it's a nuanced problem that has like a few different angles to it. Part of it, I think, is setting the wrong expectations for what you're really trying to build, right? So if you look at one of the main metrics that organizations are looking at to determine whether they're benefiting from, let's say, Gen AI, it comes back to that idea of like top line, bottom line. And oftentimes there's this expectation, like a lot of the investments are very top line heavy, right? Where they expect that they'll be able to build new products that are hyper-focusing on, you know, like the customer experience, let's say. So they're going to be exposing like customer experience chatbots for better or worse, or, you know, a bunch of that stuff. And the reality is if you take a hard look at it when it comes to Gen AI, where you can get the most benefit as an organization is not necessarily in your product, where it makes sense for sure. And, you know, like the 5% of projects that are actually successful in generating like P&L impact are usually like startups that are going hard on building their entire product around like LLMs and whatnot, right? That can happen. But overwhelmingly, especially for large enterprise, the benefit will be in solving for specific processes internally, as opposed to trying to like build something like generic, holistic, whatever, and measuring those very diligently, right? And understanding the impact you're actually driving, which you can only do again if you do a decent job of measuring what like quality and impact looks like across the business.
Yeah. There's a great question that just came in the chat as well. CJ Tompkins is asking, is it more difficult getting ICs or departments on board with data governance, or is it the VPs and senior execs that have a harder time getting on board with data governance? In your experience, what have you seen as you advise clients? Is it the ICs or is it the execs?
So,
or both?
It's a great question. I will say it's whoever has a problem to solve that's going to be easiest to convince. What I mean by that is oftentimes like our conversations with organizations are going to start from a technical perspective, right? We're going to deal with like an IC or usually like a director or that kind of seniority within the organization that has been mandated with like, hey, we need to move to this new platform, let's say, right? But the problem is, and that's something we've learned the hard way, when it comes to data initiatives, if you only deliver if you only solve the technical problem on time, on budget, you haven't been successful yet, right? Because inherently when you're dealing with data initiatives, you're really dealing with, like, let's say that you build a perfect data warehouse, great, but unless you have somebody at the business level actually consuming, like, you know, generating insight from that data warehouse, you haven't actually solved the problem for the business, right? You've just built a very cool object. And so when we engage with ICs first, or let's say department managers, oftentimes it's getting them to realize that they themselves will have a hard time being successful unless they kind of take ownership of that, like, full downstream chain that goes all the way down to their downstream consumer, right? And once you do that, and once you start calling out, for example, it's happened like 3 times in the last 2 days, having conversations with organizations that are struggling with, like, oh, we have several sources of truth, right, for any given entity, and we have several definitions. Then you simply ask the technical stakeholder that you're dealing with, like, hey, so how are you going to solve for that technically if you don't have one definition, right? So you can use logic basically to get those folks on board. And I think it's not the hardest thing in the world. It's a little off-putting the first time you bring up DG. You're way more successful, again, if you frame this as, hey, let's actually solve for the problem you're looking to solve, and let's make you successful within the business. And the way to do that is to, like, address this other thing that's downstream that might impact you without you wanting to, right? Like, you don't necessarily have to spell it out as DG, but it's what you're doing. Right. When it comes to VPs and, you know, like VPs and up, it goes back to this idea of, like, as long as you don't try to boil the ocean, which, by the way, great way to get a DG initiative to fail if you try to do everything all at once. As long as you go to them and tell them, hey, I know, and oftentimes what ends up happening is, like, you're their head of data, VP data, whatever, is mandated with the data governance initiative of the organization because there's data in the name, when in actuality, data governance, like, has almost as much to do with technology as it has with, like, overall business operations. You know, like, it's a very business tech kind of overlap. Going to a VP that is tasked with building a strategy and telling them, hey, you need to get to a place where you've validated what you're trying to build, and you've validated the framework that will get you there, and you need to do that in as short a period of time as possible so you don't overinvest into it. That's a great way to get them to go, oh, you know what, this is an answer to my problem, and I will have an answer to, you know, I will be able to turn around to the rest of the business, have an answer to, like, what are we doing for DG? And also, I will be able to deliver on the promise that my CEO has asked us to be able to do Gen AI within the next fiscal, right? So it's like, yeah, always trying to, like, tie those outcomes, but it always comes down to being very, I think, pragmatic about what's going to come out at the other end.
That makes sense. In a similar, that's funny. CJ says, how did you know my exact situation? Thanks for sharing. I'm glad that was helpful, CJ. Thanks for asking. And if anybody else has any questions, feel free to hit the chat. In a similar spirit, you know, as you go in, you know, again, I looked at your background. You've played all different roles for Infrastructs and just generally everything it looked like, from go-to-market to implementations to now CEO and operator. When you are pitching to a C-suite and you want to get them in line or get them bought into having a data initiative, how would you approach that? Like, what are the main selling points or talking points that you have when you go around a modernization strategy, since it sounds like that's a pretty big part of the Infrastructs business? Like, why do you see people saying, you know what, let's do this, now's the time, at least from what you share with them or how you position it?
So I will say the overwhelming majority of the time, I don't pitch C-levels. I tend to take this approach. And again, I know it's a huge cliche, I guess, and maybe fittingly with my last name, but I tend to just listen, right? The best way to sell a C-suite executive is just to ask them, hey, so what's the mandate of the business this year? And what's going to keep you from getting there? And as long as this is the conversation, this is the backdrop, and you're able to kind of tie back those challenges that the C-suite executive has identified as, like, oh, this is one thing that I'm wary of that I think might keep us from getting there. As long as you're able to take that and potentially have a conversation with, like, the rest of the business leaders in the org that are reporting into that person and ask them, like, hey, about the challenge, what do you think? Like, as long as you're able to connect those dots and act as, mm-hmm, like a force multiplier to the people that are already there, that's usually enough. But you can't just go in there and try to make, like, a hard sales pitch, because that's a great way to fall down the path of like, you know, eyes rolling and, you know, like buzzword salad kind of thing. I'm a strong believer in, you know, trying to get away from this paradigm that like historically, like if you look at data strategy as a practice, it's always been very, I think it's holistic because it has to be, but it falls down that path of like being this very like vague thing where it's all paperware and whatever. I'm a strong believer in tying that to actual outcomes and tying that to measurable outcomes that come on a regular basis. Because unless you do that, eventually the business will just lose faith in your ability to solve for the bigger problems of the organization. And when I say you, I mean like as a data executive, let's say in an organization.
Right. Yeah.
And really that's what you're looking to. That's what you're looking to address, right? Like you need to build that faith and that momentum, because that's how you get the buy-in you need to get people bought, you know, to get people participating in your like data citizenship kind of thing.
Yeah, that also makes sense. And I agree with you. It's never a wise decision to go into a hard selling mode if there isn't a already identified problem or desire to modernize. Maybe a different question that would be fun to hear your answer on, since you have touched so many different data implementations. Do you have a favorite project you've ever worked on or a favorite use case that you've ever delivered that comes to mind?
Oh yeah, big time. This one's an easy one. So we worked with that organization, Whoop. If you don't know them, like they're this
nice.
Love their team, super forward thinking people. Shout out to Matt there, who has their data team. But basically, we've helped them build out this holistic rollout of like a Gen AI, you know, chatbot that has access to the entirety of their data, but is fed from a dynamically generated semantic model on the back end. That's nice. It's using basically the metadata they have across the board in like their DBT transformations and whatever. Sorry for that. To bring that back to the actual like agent level. And this way, what they've been able to do is basically transform their business to be extremely fast at innovating, because now they were able to break out the entire organization into like those very fast-paced, innovative groups that work on a feature or one hypothesis for 6 weeks, and then they either succeed or they move on, right? But to be able to support that, especially at scale, you need to be able to provide with the product owners in those different groups like insights, a very like a wealth of insight in a very short amount of time. And so in their case, basically their insight team couldn't have taken it, and by rolling this out, they get themselves to a place where they were effectively able to get all of those people to become self-sufficient, and the data team is now able to focus on like, you know, harder, bigger problems on the data science side and that kind of stuff. And to me, this is such a beautiful project, because it is exactly what we're gunning for as an industry, right? In the data space, we're gunning to get to that place where you're able to give that full holistic enablement to your downstream consumers. And really that's how you solve for BI, right? I know some people are taking very like drastic stances where they're like, oh, we're gonna get rid of BI dashboards and just use like chatbots and whatever. I don't know that I will necessarily go all the way there, but there is certainly there's certainly value to the idea that when you think about your BI problems, you should break them down into exactly what you're trying to give your consumers. In some cases, it's the ability to drill down into data, which great, right? Dashboard is for that. But then in some instances, especially when dealing with executives or, you know, product owners or whatever, what they're looking for is really just insight. They want to ask a question, get an answer, work off of that. And I think Whoop is probably the one organization that has executed on that vision the best and actually made what a lot of organizations aspire to like a reality.
On the flip side, any pet peeves you've had dealing with a broad set of customers, any certain things that you've seen that's a pattern or cyclical with customers that annoys you?
It's less with customers and it's more with the industry at large. My big pet peeve, because we're on the topic of data governance, I find that the field of data governance is has I call it an illness, right? Where whenever they're trying to articulate what data governance is at a practical, tangible level, they always whip out that Dhamma wheel diagram that I'm certain you've seen before. That is the least approachable way to convey information of what data governance is all about. And in my the folks in my data governance practice internally know this. Like I have an allergy to that diagram because I find that, you know, the industry as a whole has kind of landed on that as a way to communicate what DG is. And I think it's a terrible way to go about it. And it presupposes like a whole bunch of background knowledge that your audience is supposed to have, which in reality, nowadays, nobody, like most people don't have that. So you have to do the work of, you know, making DG as a topic much more approachable. And the way to do that is, again, to tie it back to very tangible outcomes and explain like, hey, this is what we're doing to enable this. And by the way, this is DG, right?
Did you say DAMA, like the data architecture group? Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, well, nothing against the group itself, but they're one diagram.
No, it's fine. I just wanted to make sure I heard you right. Like, I've been to plenty of DAMA days in the past, and it's funny that that's been brought up in your meetings with customers. Like, it's such a random thing. But again, yeah, I agree. Yeah. No offense to DAMA. Love DAMA, but this diagram is a throwback for sure.
Yeah.
I got
teach anything on your side you're curious about?
Yeah. One question that I have. You know, we talk about a lot of things when, you know, the technology world, you know, we talk about people, process, technology, or tools. So data governance is definitely a big portion is people coming together, defining things. That's definitely a big thing. I want to understand what, like the tools, like what role in your mind, where do you kind of as an organization start thinking about, oh yeah, this is the time to get a tool now, because yeah, we can define these things in an Excel or we can define this in some other place, but there is a point where it doesn't scale. And can you kind of, shine some light on that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I have this mental model I use whenever I have a conversation with a customer trying to figure out where they're trying to go, build out the roadmap, that kind of stuff, right? I basically break it down into vision, thesis, and proof. So the vision to me is, hey, how will the business interact with data 2 years, 3 years from now, like way down the road? Basically, what's your ideal operating model with data within the business? Don't think about technology. Don't think about anything. Just answer the question, how you would see your downstream consumers actually dealing with data? How do you see your data teams dealing with data? Very meta conversation. From there, though, you end up with like a pretty clear picture of like, hey, this is what we want as a business. And then you can start making decisions as to what will be the technologies that will enable that model down the road. That's what I call the thesis, right? You come up with your solution to the problem you're trying to solve. Basically, you define your problem, which is your vision. Your solution is how will we get there and what will be the technologies that we need to onboard to do that. And then what I call the proof is that first horizontal slice that encompasses all of those tech choices that you've identified and validates them as soon as humanly possible, right? So, and that means like identifying this very, very thin, narrow sliver of like one metric, one business process, one whatever. But at the very least, it will get you to deploy all of those tools that you're considering, get to a place where you know whether they're what you need or not, and then you can roll off from there, right? I'm not saying that you necessarily have to go down the path of like heavy duty procure everything from day one. I don't think that's a great idea. But there's something to be said about like, you know, encroaching onto that final selection or relatively early in the process, because then you can have more meaningful conversations with like the vendor itself, because that's something I think a lot of organizations might be neglecting as they're going through the process of procuring a tool for whatever. Like the vendor, yes, the vendor's trying to sell you, that goes without saying, but crucially, let me tell you, if there's one person in the world that will be motivated to solve all of your problems and, you know, throw resources at you and enable you and, you know, like come up with like the architecture that will really solve it, it's going to be the vendor team, right? And so once you have a general sense of like, hey, we want to work with like that technology or that technology, like bring them in early, having that conversation, super helpful. And I don't mean that as like, you know, I'm not trying to shill for you guys, but like, I really mean it like earnestly. Getting to that place where you normalize those conversations with vendors and also, you know, being fully transparent and direct with them that like, hey, you know, we haven't chosen, it's not a final decision, but we want to try it out as part of this, you know, this first cycle that we're taking through the entire framework. That's a good way to approach it, I think.
Nice.
Cool. I've got a couple last questions. We only have a few minutes left, but again, on the topic of normalizing certain conversations, like, we've got a bunch of events coming up with Joe Reese, if you're familiar with him, the author of the Fundamentals for Data Engineering book, in San Francisco, Phoenix, Atlanta. I'm sure you've been to plenty of these types of happy hour events or different social data social events or low-key meetups. And I'm curious, as you're talking to people that are in the data space, is there ever any red flags that people say to you that make you think they're full of crap when it comes to their competency level in data?
I will be very political in answering that question, because obviously, right, like, I don't mean to be like overly harsh. I think there's something to be said about how, let's say, when, for example, when somebody will talk about AI and will not discriminate between, let's say, Gen AI and AI, right? And we'll use AI as an all-encompassing term to describe what ultimately is AI, right? Or when we're having conversations around agents and really, is it really an agent? Is it a chatbot? Like, there's a lot of, especially when we're talking about like those buzzwordy concepts, I think that there's a lot of nuances that are important to strike if you want to have a productive conversation, that oftentimes you're gonna be dealing with folks. And again, I threw you flowers earlier, and now I'm throwing the pot. Especially when we're dealing with certain vendors that are going to be very hard on like regurgitating the buzzword, this, you know, the story, without necessarily bringing it at a level of pragmatism, I guess. This to me is like always the biggest red flag. When you see that like they're coming from a place of like riding the buzz wave and trying to carry you along with them. Like, I've never been a big fan of Kool-Aid, and that's very much like, it triggers my alarms whenever something like that happens, you know?
Yeah, interesting. Any green flags?
Green flags? I mean, man, whenever somebody is genuinely curious as to different ways to do things. I think like data as a space is very dogmatic, right? You're going to have some certain people that will think like, oh, this data architecture is the only way to go. And I think that like, especially with the advent of like cloud-based technologies where like compute and storage are like decoupled and all of that, I think it's opened the door to a bunch of new ways to think about data architecture. And I think that people that are genuinely curious and are able to like have strong opinions loosely held are my favorite type of people to engage with, right? Because then you can have like really productive and interesting and surprising conversations where, you know, you're always going to uncover like one or two stories that make you reconsider your own positions. And I really love that.
Yeah, I agree. I get skeptical pretty much immediately anytime somebody's highly dogmatic about something specifically, unless there's a really damn strong reason that can be substantiated. But otherwise, it's usually a lot better to remain open-minded, especially in a space that has so many different variables and permutations like data. So that's cool. Any last words? We got a minute left here. It's been such a pleasure having you on, Pierre. Any last words or any parting words for the audience, for anybody that tunes into this later?
My parting words, honestly, is I think it's difficult nowadays to do strong strategy or to do strong convincing without having at least a little bit of pizzazz, right? So find your peanut butter, find your shiny object, and you're going to go far.
There you go. Find your peanut butter. Ladies and gentlemen, you heard it here first. Thanks, Pierre. It's been a pleasure having you on, man. And I'm looking forward to seeing you in person, hopefully soon.
Yes, sir. Likewise, really appreciate you guys having me on, and this was a blast.
Cool.
Thanks,
Pierre. Take care, everybody.